Hello, everybody. I am back. Thank you for those who reached out. Turns out, whatever was going on with me was likely just a 24-hour bug. After plenty of fluids and rest, I am back to feeling mostly like myself. When I started the day, I was feeling, okay. But now, it's what? 6:30 in the evening, and I am actually feeling really, really good and super excited to share the remainder of this idea, concept, conversation, if you will, with you all, because it's really important. So let's just get back into it, right? So in the first part, which I know I just published yesterday, but if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. But in the first part of why we're talking about EVs, the way we're talking about EVs is wrong, we identified that we are moving into the early majority group of adopters and need to adjust our conversation accordingly. Instead of promoting EVs for their environmental benefits and technological advancements, we should talk about their practicality and value. I asserted that the questions that are most commonly asked about EVs should be changed, or at least redirected, to address what concerns consumers really have. Instead of talking about range, we should instead use terms and concepts that match what people are already used to with their internal combustion engine or ICE vehicles. Instead of focusing on the vehicles, we should instead recognize that an EV will take you anywhere you want to go as long as there is electricity. So that brings us to our next question, right? How long do EVs take to charge? Well, just like the how far does it go question, this question isn't really what's being asked either. People don't want to know how long it takes to charge. They want to know if they're going to have to wait for it to charge. And unfortunately, this isn't an easy question to answer. And if I'm being honest, there isn't one answer to this other than the one you really don't want to give, which is, it depends. I am going to go into some details, but before I do, I want to just share a story that I share with everybody when they ask, how long does it take to charge? My wife and I took our Model 3 from Richmond, Virginia to Miami, Florida, and back, and not once did we ever wait for the car to charge. And that typically blows people away if they've never heard something like that before. The reason being, between my wife and I, we're stopping every 2 hours or so because of human needs. So we would plug the car in wherever we happened to stop, and we would take care of human needs, and it would roughly be 10, 15 minutes or so. We'd get back to the car and unplug. We wouldn't wait for it, and then we'd continue on our way. There is a way to do this with an EV on a road trip, and that's by utilizing the bottom half of the state of charge in the battery pack, 10 to 50, 60% or so. Do not charge it all the way up to full because it takes longer the higher the state of charge. 80% and higher, 90% and higher, forget about it. Don't even go there if you're on a road trip. So I tell that story because it highlights to people you don't necessarily need to stand there waiting for it, especially, as we all know, if you are charging at home overnight, you're sleeping. It's doing the charging, you're sleeping. So people don't want to know how long it takes to charge. They want to know if they're going to have to wait for it. Now, with ICE vehicles, we really only have one way to refuel, right? By driving to a fueling station and refueling. However, with an EV, it does get really complicated because there's a lot of variability, a lot of versatility. If we're honest, you can charge on a 110 or 120 volt outlet at home, standard outlet, really slow. 220 or 240 volt outlet at home, like a dryer plug or your range, something that's 30, 40, or even 50 amps. And then at a level 2, 240 volt public charging station, which we could call fast-ish. And then a DC fast charger, really fast, sometimes. But then not all DC fast chargers are the same, right? 50 kilowatt station is not going to provide the same results as a 100, 150, 250, or 350 kilowatt station. And the fact is, EV charging is really complicated. But we don't need to communicate that. In fact, we shouldn't communicate that. While the early adopters might have been willing to learn all of the nuanced differences and technical details about EV charging, what their vehicle was capable of and what the station they were plugged into was capable of providing, along with charge curves and graphs and all of these other variables that affect charging speeds, I think it's reasonable to understand that the remaining adoption groups here, they don't really want to know all of this. And honestly, if we were to expect them to learn all of this, that is just outright asinine. We need to have a simple system that communicates EV charging in a way that is as close to ICE vehicle refueling as possible. So let's actually stop for a second and take a look at this. Let's examine the fueling systems that we have for ICE vehicles and see if we can create something similar for EV charging. So generally, there are two types of fuel with an ICE vehicle, gasoline or petrol, and diesel. And you do not want to mix these up. Diesel is not meant for gasoline-powered vehicles and vice versa. It causes a lot of problems if you mess it up. If you go to a fueling pump, diesel is usually colored green, like the little button or sticker or emblem, and gasoline or petrol is often black. Now, we do have some other variables to throw into the mix, ethanol mixes, and so from what I've seen, they are blue and some yellow, and these aren't available everywhere. With highway-rated diesel, you don't really have a variability of options, but with gasoline, we do, right? We've got 87 octane, 89, 91, sometimes 92, sometimes 93, but most people probably just think about these as regular, mid-grade, and premium, right? So we have two different fuel types. Well, okay, actually, let's call ethanol blends a third type, one that just isn't used much. So we have two that are common and one that isn't. So, okay, EV people, is this starting to sound familiar? In North America, we have different charger plug types, two that are fairly common and one that, well, isn't, or at least not anymore. We've got the J3400, which is the Tesla connector, and that is the most common. So let's think of that like gasoline. It is the most common connector type of EVs driving on the roads in North America, and it is also the most common type of connector found at public charging stations in this country. Then we have CCS, or the Combined Charging Standard, found all over the continent, but not as many vehicles are on the road that can accept this connector type, and there certainly aren't nearly as many fast charging stations that utilize this connector either, similar to diesel in that way. And then we have CHAdeMO, which is used on a number of early Japanese vehicles, most notable and most recently being the Nissan Leaf and the Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid. So to differentiate these three, let's use a similar color method to ICE refueling. However, instead of black for gasoline, let's go with red, seeing as it was the Tesla connector originally, and Tesla's company color is red. We can keep green for CCS like it is often for diesel, and then we'll just use blue for CHAdeMO like we find with the ethanol blends. And for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to ignore yellow just outright. Now, we have different plug types organized and separated the way we have different fuel types. But we still need to address the charging speeds, right? Well, luckily, this has been addressed for us already, at least a little bit. Charging on a 110 or 120 volt is already called level 1. Charging on 220 or 240 is already called level 2. So far, so good. Oh, now we have DC fast charging. And this is so complex and so complicated that I cannot imagine trying to explain it to somebody that is new to all of this, just even by lumping it all under one category, DC fast charging, or even calling it level 3 like some people do, because that doesn't nearly get into the details enough. But then I also can't imagine actually trying to explain all the different DC fast charging speeds to someone and then figuring out how to explain how it relates to what their vehicle can handle. That just, it's too much. So what do we do? Well, I suppose we'll have to break the DC fast charging down into smaller groups and use terms that continue the level 1, level 2, level 3 method. So if you can all come up with something better than this, by all means, I am all ears. But Seeing as you can't just immediately respond, I'm going to keep going. So let's assign different fast charging speeds from, let's say, level 3 to level 7. 21 to 30 kilowatts can be level 3, 31 to 50 can be level 4, 51 to 100 kilowatts can be level 5, 101 to 200 kilowatts or so, level 6, and then let's just say 201 kilowatts and higher will be level 7. Now, we can't possibly expect people to learn all of this either, so let's just use the numbers and ignore the actual kilowatts and charging speeds altogether, okay? So we'll have 1 through 7, depending on how fast of a charge it can be. So now we have a system that is simple and easy to understand for anybody, honestly, from kindergarten or older. Colors for the connector type and numbers for the charging speeds. The higher the number, the higher the charging speed. We could even take this a step further and tell people what their car is. For example, the Chevy Bolt EV. Let's put that as a green 4. It's a CCS connector and charges roughly at 50 kilowatts or so. And before somebody sends me a nasty email, I know it peaks at 55 kilowatts, but that's way closer to being a 4 than a 5. So shush. A much faster charging vehicle like the Hyundai Ioniq 5 would be a green 7 because it uses CCS and it charges at a 7 or a level 7, if we'll call it that. So now if we classify DC fast chargers with the same number system, all a new consumer has to do is match the color and the number of their car to the color and number of a public charging station when they're out and about. I'm not talking about at home. Let's leave that alone. But how easy would this be? You go out and you buy an EV and you say, how does it recharge? Okay, well, I just bought a new Tesla Model 3. Okay, it's a red 7. Great. Where are the red 7 stations? And that doesn't mean that you can't use red 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever else, but you just understand because it's a lower number that it's not going to be as quick or as fast. So red 7, great, I'm looking for that. Like the Bolt, green 4, I'm looking for that. And you understand, well, this is my car. If I plug into a green 7, I'm probably still going to only get the speed of a green 4. Great. This is simple, and that's exactly what we want to do for people. So how easy would this be? Well, I really hope by now some of you know exactly what I have done with all of this right here. But for those of you listening that don't know yet, I'm just gonna reveal it, right? I didn't just now create this really simple system to explain EV charging. I cannot take credit for the genius. No, this is a system that already exists. It's called the Chargeway system, and it was developed naturally by the geniuses over at Chargeway, and it's incorporated into their app, which, by the way, is freaking amazing. It is one of the most brilliant apps I have encountered, and before long, I honestly expect that we will not need to use any other charging app ever, which is a whole different thing, and I'm not going to get into that right now. So there you have it. How long does it take to charge? Well, what car, what charger, what color, and what number? Actually, just go download the Chargeway app. Keep it simple. But we have more really common questions to address, don't we? How long does the battery last? How many times have we heard that one? I was at a public event, a county event this past Saturday, and we had an EV display. And let me tell you, I heard that question over and over again. And you know how I responded? I asked them a question. I said, are you worried about having to spend a lot of money to replace a battery in a couple of years? And the answer that I got was yes. 100% of the time I asked them that, they said yes. Now, I know this isn't a large data set, but genuinely, I believe the real question that people are asking when they ask, how long does the battery last? What they're really meaning is, will I have to spend thousands of dollars to replace the battery in a couple of years? And the answer to that question is more than likely, no, you won't. One reason is that less than 1% of batteries over the last 14 years and what, like 5 million EVs have failed and needed to be replaced outside of a manufacturer's recall, mind you. And the other reason is that there is an 8-year, 100,000-mile minimum battery warranty on every single EV sold in the US. So the answer is no, you really won't have to worry about it. And honestly, I have some personal experience that's contrary to this. And for that reason, honestly, I will not own an EV past that warranty period. But there are plenty of people that probably do. And what is the risk that they're really taking? Well, if we assume that roughly 0.75%, which is a very small number, of all the approximately 5 million or so EVs sold in the US since 2010 needed to have battery replacements for failures, not counting those involved in recalls, then that would be a 1 in 133 chance. And that is also taking into account all of the early Nissan Leaf batteries that definitely skewed the statistics. And I'm just throwing Nissan Leaf under the bus there. There's plenty of early EVs that manufacturers were still figuring out the battery technology. So chances are now, if we look at, say, 2017 and on, it's a much lower percentage. In my personal experience, and I've shared this before, but for those that haven't heard it, I'll share it again in a abbreviated fashion. I had a 2016 Chevy Spark EV, and we now have a 2021 Tesla Model 3. Both of them have had their batteries replaced. So the chance of that happening to anybody would be 0.005625%, or 1 in 17,778. Not very likely to happen, but it happened to me. So that's why I would not want to own an EV outside the battery warranty. And honestly, I can't afford to replace the battery in anything, not even my phone probably, at this point, and I'm not going to take the risk. However, for most people, they do not keep their cars that long. Most people swap out their cars every 2 to 3 years or so, and there are a number of extended warranties that cover batteries now for EVs, even beyond that 8-year, 100,000 miles. So most people will never have to worry about replacing the battery ever. How great is that? Also, keep in mind that costs are coming down. So if somebody had to replace a battery in, let's say, a Tesla Model 3 10 years from now, it would likely cost around $5,000 at most, which is basically the cost of replacing an engine or a transmission in an ICE vehicle. And yes, I know that what I said is just highly speculative, and there are so many variables that would make your head spin if we tried to actually figure it out. So how about we just stick to, you will probably never have to worry about it ever. And if you never own the car outside of the warranty period, you will definitely not have to ever worry about it. Easy enough, right? Okay, any other questions to address? Honestly, I can't think of any right now. So I'm going to leave it at that. But if you think of others that are really common, feel free to call into the EV Resource Hotline or email me with your thoughts. So what else can we do to change how we're communicating about EVs? Well, for one, we can focus on a big factor that will influence consumer behavior: cost. Most people think EVs are expensive. And while there are a lot of expensive EVs, there are also a lot of expensive ICE vehicles too. In fact, if we look at the average cost of a new vehicle in North America right now, it is just shy of $49,000. But that's a new vehicle, and nearly three times more people buy used vehicles each year than new vehicles. And the average cost of a used vehicle right now, according to Carfax, is approximately $33,500. Do you know how easy it is to buy a used EV for less than $33,500? Super easy. Granted, I will acknowledge that the average cost of a used EV is around $38,000, but there are so many options for much less, some under $20,000. So are EVs expensive? Some are, some aren't. But what are people really thinking about when they think EVs are expensive? I bet you have this one in your mind, right? It's, can I afford one? And that is a very different thought, isn't it? Except most people don't actually pay full price for their vehicle at the time of the sale. 80% of people in 2023 in the United States financed their vehicle. So if we're going to communicate about cost, we need to communicate about the monthly cost of an EV compared to that of an ICE vehicle. And I don't know what each situation is like for other people, but for my wife and myself, when we were looking at replacing her 2011 Volkswagen GTI, it was costing us about $850 a month for gas, maintenance, repairs, and the payment to the bank. I'm not including insurance into that because that is so variable from person to person, family to family, even zip code to zip code and car to car. Not going to get into it. So gas, maintenance, repairs, and the payment, $850 a month. We replaced it with our Tesla Model 3, and that costs us about $650 a month for the same things. The electricity, maintenance, which is nearly nothing, repairs, also nearly nothing, and the payment to the bank. It's a savings of $200 a month for us. In fact, that is why we got it. If it didn't save us money, we wouldn't have bought the car. So are EVs more expensive? In most cases, probably not. Can most people afford one? In most cases, probably. So how do we want to communicate this? I would recommend telling them a personal story. If you are an EV owner, tell them your story. Tell them how much money you are saving compared to a comparable ICE vehicle. EVs can and often do save you hundreds of dollars a month. So as we stand at the threshold of this new era in transportation, I see a clear need to adjust our conversation about EVs. The journey so far has illuminated the path for the enthusiasts and the pioneers, but the road ahead requires us to engage a much broader audience, the early majority. These pragmatic adopters are not primarily motivated by the allure of new technology or environmental activism. They seek reliable, practical solutions that mesh with their everyday lives. The insights and strategies that I've outlined advocate for a shift from a narrative that is steeped in technological jargon and environmental idealism to one that speaks directly to the practical, immediate benefits of EV ownership. By emphasizing aspects like cost savings, convenience, ease of use, and the sheer readiness of EVs to meet daily needs, we can bridge the chasm and guide the early majority across. This isn't merely just about selling cars. It's about fostering a movement towards sustainable transportation that is inclusive, accessible, and appealing to the widest possible audience. As we refine our messages and focus on relatability, underscoring the tangible benefits of electric vehicles, we pave the way for a future where EVs are not just a choice for the few, but the preferred option for the many. As we continue to navigate this transition, I would encourage all of us to commit to a dialogue that resonates, educates, and inspires. The journey of EV adoption is ongoing, and by embracing a more inclusive and pragmatic approach to our communication, I believe we ensure that it's a journey we can all share in, driving forward into a better future for all of us. So what do you think? I would love to hear all of your feedback, your thoughts, if you agree or disagree, whatever, it's perfectly fine. I want to hear from you. So time then for the EV Resource Hotline. This is your chance to call in and possibly be featured right here on the EV Resource Podcast. I welcome and invite you to call in with your EV questions, comments, or discussion topics. There are two easy ways to do that. Either use your smartphone's built-in voice recording software, record your message, please try to keep it to 90 seconds or less, and then send it my way to hello@ev-resource.com. Or you can take your same 90-second message and call in and leave a message on the EV Resource Hotline. That toll-free number is 1-844-387-2428. Again, that's 1-844-EVR-CHAT. And if you know someone special with an upcoming wedding, birthday, anniversary, graduation, or some other special occasion, you can give them a unique gift of recorded voices from friends and family telling them why they're special. The recordings can be podcasted or put onto a keepsake. Visit lifeonrecord.com to learn more. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode and would like to hear more, please subscribe to the EV Resource Podcast wherever you like to watch or listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you're looking to stay plugged into the EV community, head over to ev-resource.com for the very best educational resources, community connections, EV reviews, and a whole lot more. The EV Resource Podcast is a production of EV Resource and is supported by viewers and listeners just like you. Supporters of EV Resource on Patreon include at the director tier, Rajiv Narayan and Andy Cooper, at the executive producer tier, Christopher Lawrence, and at the producer tier, Eric Weber and Tony Stunts. If you would appreciate ad-free episodes of the podcast, free EV Resource merch, support recognition, and more, head over to patreon.com/EV Resource. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. If you have any feedback, please email hello@ev-resource.com and put podcast feedback in the subject line. I've been your host, Zach Hurst. Thank you so much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you next time.